And her home group I had to write down because I was having trouble remembering it. It's the Sierra Sky Park group. Wow. All right, so give it up for Relinda G.
Hello, everybody. I'm glad to be here, and I'm really grateful that I was asked to come back. I've been here before. It was maybe 10 or 15 years ago when I spoke here, and Bill H. Got to be careful with that. Asked me to come over here, and I really enjoyed it, and it was quite some time ago. But my name is Relinda, and I am an alcoholic. I still remember the day, the last drunk that I had was on a Memorial weekend, you know, and that was May 31st, 1994. So if God's will in my life, at the end of this month, I'll have 28 years. And I am I love sobriety. I truly do. I love recovery. I love this program called Alcoholics Anonymous. It actually helped me to save my life. It restored me to sanity. Because at the end of my drinking, my life was so unmanageable. You know, I didn't think I had a problem with drinking. The only reason that I started to have problems at home, that I started to connect the dots that the alcohol was causing the problem in my life. And so I remember the end of my drinking. I had my last weekend, and I'm from Corcoran. That's my hometown. I grew up in Corcoran. Born in Hanford, raised in Corcoran, came to Visalia to come shop for our school clothes. So we were here a lot, especially in Mooney Groves. And we would come here for Easter all the time when I was growing up. So I'm very familiar with this area. I'm a farm worker. You know, before I moved to Fresno, I was out there in the fields chopping weeds. You know, I drove a cotton picker for 5.5 years. So I did it all. Name it, I did it. But the thing was is that I didn't want that kind of life for myself. And I needed to do something different. And so that's why I moved to Fresno. But there were some other circumstances that led to my first geographic. So I basically, at that last Memorial weekend, I'm checking out in my relationship with my significant other that I'm living with. He's my second so-called like husband. I married my first husband. I had 3 children from my first husband. And I'm with him. We're drinking because he's my partner in crime, because he drinks like I drink. I don't want somebody that can't keep up with me, you know. And I used to basically drink him. I could drink him under the table. And so we basically, I was letting go of that relationship. And I have 4 kids. And the reality was is that I'm leaving him because he's the problem. Not me. He's the problem. You know, and the work is the problem because of all the stress that I was going through. And so I just decided I got to get out. And so I actually got treatment. My kids also were, I had 2 teenagers. You've seen her one. He's my oldest, and he was 16 at the time, and my daughter was 15, and they had the problem. They were dabbling in alcohol and drugs too, and so it was like I have them in a teen program, outpatient program, and to get them help. And then one day I remember going to I had that whole weekend, I got drunk with my sister. I went to Corcoran to go get drunk with my sister and our friends and my family. And I remember going to, it was like Monday, I woke up, I tried to take a drink and it just didn't work for me. Tuesday I go to work and I'm just like feeling like crap because of the hangover. And I called the counselor that was treating my kids, And the counselor told me, and for the first time in my life, I heard it. She goes, Rolinda, I've heard your kid's story. You need to stop drinking. And when she said that to me, I was like, I got to do something. And I told her, I'll do anything. Help me. I'll do whatever you want. And she put me into the adult program, the outpatient program. So I'm going to the adult patient program. My kids are going to the teenage program. And one of the things that, what do they tell me? Part of, I'm going to 4 meetings at this outpatient program, and they're telling me, you got to go to AA. That's part of the program. And I just looked down, like, how in the world can I do this? I'm working. I have my kids. They're in their teen program. I'm going to your outpatient program. You want me to go to 3 more meetings? You know, I didn't know how to do it. But I was willing. And I said, okay, I'll do it. I started going to AA meetings. And I remember the program that I was going to, they did an intervention on me. I was talking in my groups about what was going on inside the house. You know, because my husband, we're still together, we're significant other, we had lived together 6 years, not drinking, and he was still drinking and using. And I'm talking about him being on the roof of the house with a gun, a rifle, and doing his thing. And they're looking at me, and they're like, and I'm thinking, this is normal. You know, this is just my normal life. And so they actually did an intervention on me, and they said, Rolinda, we're worried about you. We're concerned for your safety. And when they told me that, I was like, what? You know, I didn't know it. And I lived in the pocket in central Fresno where a lot of the gangs were. And they were like, you need to wake up. Something's going on with you. We're concerned for your safety. And when they told me that, I was like, okay, I heard it for the first time. So I actually, this is before I got a sponsor. They say in the first year of your sobriety, don't do major decisions in that first year, you know. And so I actually up and moved out of the house, took my kids and moved across town, and I left him there. And that was the best thing that I could have done. For the first time in my life, I was helping me, and I was helping my kids and protecting them. And so I moved across town, and then I, lo and behold, I came across a woman's meeting. I got invited to this woman's meeting, and I went to this meeting, and I met my sponsor at this woman's meeting. The program, you know how, I don't know if you guys ever been in programs, they start to, you know, get on you about getting a sponsor. Get a sponsor. You need a sponsor. And so I knew I had to get a sponsor. And so I went to this women's meeting, and I actually said to her, I go, if somebody comes up to me, you know, let's see what happens. Because I was going to meetings in Fresno, and nobody was coming up to me. Maybe I was giving that vibe out because, you know, like, stay away from me. You know, you don't want to talk to me. And I went to this women's meeting, and at the end of the meeting, she came up to me, and she stuck her hand out. And I looked at her, and I just felt so good. It was like somebody wants me. Somebody wants to know me. And so she told me to come back. So the following Thursday, it was on a Thursday night, and there was like 30 women in this women's meeting, and it was at 7 o'clock at night. And so I went back to that meeting. And I'm like, if this lady comes, I'm saying it in my head, if this lady comes to me again, and if she has, you know, reaches out to me, I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor. Sure enough, she made a beeline to me again. She stuck out her hand, welcomed me, and it made me feel so good. And I asked her if she would sponsor me, and she said yes, with no hesitation. And so that was my start in AA, where I really started to get my feet grounded and getting plugged into the program, because it's so important that you get plugged in. Because if you're dabbling out here and staying back, you're going to miss out on a lot of the miracles that this program has to offer. And I remember her telling me, she goes, she suggested, why don't you come to Tuesday night meeting? That's our home group meeting. And I was like, oh, my God, I got to go to another night meeting, you know. And so I go, okay, I'll be there. you know. And I remember I got my kids, I had them in the teen program, I did my adult program, and I had to go to that meeting that she suggested. And so I took they were teens, 15 and 16, I dropped them off at Fashion Fair Mall. I says, I'll be right back. I'm going to go over here and this meeting and let this lady know that I came. And I remember going to, I went to the same place where that women's meeting was at. The meeting wasn't there. And I was like, oh my God, I just assumed it would be at the same place, right? And so I pulled out my meeting schedule. I didn't give up. And I went down the list and I seen another meeting down the street at St. Anthony's. So I went over there and I seen all these men in the back of the building. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to that meeting, you know, because it was a men's meeting. I didn't know it. I didn't know how to read the schedule yet. And so I went down the schedule again and it was another meeting down the street. So I went to that meeting and that was the meeting she was at. I didn't give up. And then I'm looking at the meeting. This meeting was an hour and a half. I'm looking at my watch, looking at the clock. I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's getting close to 9 o'clock. I got to get my kids, you know, and pick them up. So I snuck out. I got up. I went and got my kids. But I came back to the meeting. I told my kids, stay in the car. Wait, I'll be right back. And so I go in and I waited till the meeting was over. And I told her, you would not believe what I went through to get to this meeting. You know, and I told her everything. What I had done, and she just looked at me and she was Belinda, you went to any lengths to stay sober. She had 10 years of sobriety. She had something that I didn't have. She gave me hope. She started to talk this language about recovery, about sobriety, what it's about, and she started to be the example for me. And I remember when she wanted me to go with her to meetings. I had a car. I says, I'll meet you at the meeting. She goes, no. Drive to my house, park your car, get in my truck, and we'll go to the meeting together. And I was like, okay, you know. And I didn't want to do it, but I did it. And I did that was the best thing for me because she got to know who I was, and I got to know who she was. And she was sharing about her story. And I was like, oh, I did that too. You know, I started to identify. And I would share what I did. You know, so by the time when I got to the fifth step, I remember doing my step and we're going over it, the fifth step. And she goes, well, what about that time when it's not in here? And I was like, man, she was paying attention when I was talking. Truly paying attention. She knew who I was. And now I didn't have these secrets anymore, you know, because for me, I'm an alcoholic. I don't want you to know those secrets, you know, because I don't know about you, but I had some secrets and I was ashamed about. And she was the first person in my life, you know, that I told my secret. I had a couple of them. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, okay. It was nothing. It was nothing. But for me, that's the stuff that keeps me sick. It keeps me in the disease of alcoholism. That's what makes me want to drink, to forget, to numb myself, you know, and that, you know, just stuff it. Keep stuffing it, keep stuffing it, and keep stuffing it. And that's what I had done all my life. I drank from age 15 until the day I walked in here, and that was age 34. And I did not know until I came in here what it was about. I drank for 19 years. How many of us even think about that? I never thought about that, you know, until I walked into the rooms and until I got into active recovery. Because being part of Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps, doing what we do here, it's so important because it actually gets you in touch with who you are and you start to, you know, uncover all these things, these secrets, and you become healthy again. I became healthy. I was growing because remember, I don't know if you heard this story, you've heard him in treatment programs. You know, I was 15. So when I walked in, I was 34, but in my mind, I was that 15-year-old. I didn't know how to handle life. I didn't know how to do life. And I had a degree, but I was stupid. I don't know about you guys, but I felt so stupid. I did not know about this thing called life, how to do life. You know, I don't know where I was at, because when I was 15 years old, my mom, my dad could not control me. And the reason why I look at that is that when I did that four step, I did, my sponsor had joined this new group. They were called the Trudgers, and they're a very hardcore group. And one of the things she says that they do an autobiography, and she wasn't taught that way. She was taught laid out in the big book and writing that out that way. And she gave me the option. What do you want to do, Linda? I'm willing to try this new way that this group is doing, or you could do it this way. And I said, hey, you just tell me what to do. I don't care. I'll do it. Because that's how desperate I was. You have to be desperate to want this. You know, for me, I was desperate and I wanted a new way of living because my way wasn't working. And so what happened was, is I did both of the ways. I did the autobiography and I did it the way it was lined up in the big book. You know, and to me, that was the best thing that could have happened because it actually uncovered some of those secrets that I had stuffed that I forgot about, and it came out. When I did my fifth step, I remember with my sponsor, I couldn't believe what I cried about. It was something that I did not realize how it affected me as a child. When I was growing up, my older sister was like a second mom to me because my mom was always working in the fields, always. So she got us up, she dressed us, she fed us, she made sure we got to school, she made sure we came home, that we did our chores and helped out in cleaning. We did all that stuff inside the house. She eloped when she was 21 years old, and she left without saying goodbye. And I started to talk about that, and I started to cry. Something as small as that, that emotional pain that I didn't realize that it affected me, you know, and I'm crying. I was like, what is going on? Why is this happening to me? You know, because I was that little child. She was my mom, and she left me. She abandoned me. You know, as I grew up, I knew things were different, but until I said it out loud to another human being, which is a sponsor, you know, and when I did that, you know, I started to realize how some of these emotional things that we go through in life that we stuff, and if we don't talk about it, it eats us up. And so for me, I did not want to die. You know, I did not want to drink anymore, so I was willing to do anything to keep going forward. So I got through that, and you know what? It was the most, I loved it. We went and bought some food. I don't think maybe a Pollo Loco's food, and we went to Woodward Park, and we laid a blanket down, and we just sat there, and we talked. I just basically talked about everything. She knew a lot of stuff already. So, but we sat there for a couple of hours going over my fourth step. And I'm grateful for that because the reality is that I was a sick person, you know, but I wanted to get well. And that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we get well. We don't have to stay sick anymore. We can move forward and we can do our lives and we can get restored to sanity, you know, and that is so important. I go to the Saturday AM Big Book meeting at Yosemite Falls Restaurant. You guys are welcome to go. I love that meeting. We read the book every Saturday morning. I've been going to that meeting since the day that I walked into the rooms. I haven't changed it. I don't want to change something that's not broken. It's worked for me. I get to read the big book over and over and over again. And there are times when I can read it and I'm like, oh my God, I don't remember that. You know, so the big book, it has all the answers to your problems if you read the book. The book is so important. I love that book. I read that book, and I did my steps with the 12 and 12, you know, as it's laid out. And so, and that's what I do with sponsees today. You know, I work with them on that, and we do the same thing. I go to, I changed the home group at 5 years sobriety. And I'm a Bud Light drinker. Let me qualify for my drinking. I love Bud Light. I used to tell people I can drink two cases like that easy. And they were like, there's no way, you're too small for that. I go, yes, I can. You know, I live by light. You know, and when the big book talks about switching from beer to wine, I drank the wine too. I'm not a wine connoisseur. If it's Ripple, if it's, Bartles and James, I'll drink that. But the fancy wines, I'm not that. That's not me. I'll always go back to Bud Light. Hard liquor, it has to be in a mixed drink. I can't do hard liquor because I had a terrible experience when I was 15 years old, driving to a basketball game. I basically got some rum and coke, drank it all, because I'm not a sipper, I'm a guzzler. So I don't know the effects that happens with it. Downed it quick, and next thing I knew it, pulled over to the side, and I was getting sicker than a dog. And then next thing you know, I'm wiping myself clean and going to the basketball game. You know, that's the kind of drinker that I am. I'm not one that's going to waste my time. I want the effects that alcohol produces. I want that feeling. You know, I want to get drunk, and I want to get to that point where it's going to soothe me. So I know for a fact that I cannot do that anymore. But I've had some really wonderful, you know, I got married when I was 16 years old, ran away 3 times because I didn't want mom and dad to tell me what to do. 3rd time, I succeeded. And because I was with my ex-husband, my mom married me off in a judge's chamber. Can you believe that? Today I'm like, why in the world would a judge marry a 16-year-old off? You know, and needless to say, the marriage didn't work. And he winded up getting locked up in prison. He went to a drug prison, rehab prison, because of his drug use. And the reality was that I couldn't wait for him. I had to change my life because I had 3 children who were depending on me. That's when I did my geographic to Fresno. And I started college. And I had to let him go. And the reality is that I took me, the alcoholic, to Fresno. And I hit the nightclubs every weekend. You know, that's the kind of person I was. And the reality is I dragged my kids through a lot of pain. I exposed them to a lot of pain. And I regret that with all my heart. I had a lot of guilt because of the stuff that I did. You know, there were times I left them at home by themselves, you know, and I wish I could change time, but I can't. You know, when I came into the rooms, I told my sponsor, I go, I was a yeller like my mom, and I was a cusser. I always yelled and cussed at my kids. And I told my sponsor, I says, I want to stop that. I don't want to do that anymore. She goes, well, then, Melinda, that's the first step. You said it out loud, start doing it. And I stopped doing it. You know, and I'm by myself. I left my husband, the second one, moved away. I'm sober. And I committed myself to my kids, to my sobriety, to recovery, and to my kids. I said I was not going to get together with no man until that 3rd child, because my first 3 kids are from my first marriage, and I dragged them through the ringer with my drinking. And I said, I'm going to basically this 3rd child, until he's 18 or he graduates from high school, that's when I'll decide what I'm going to do, if I'm going to get married or not. And so that did happen. So 5 years, I was a single person raising my 4 kids. And that was a commitment in sobriety and recovery that I do not regret at all, because I gave them something back. I have had a journey here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll never forget. I've had a lot of ups. I've had a lot of downs. You know, when I was maybe 4 years sober, my father died, and I walked through my first death in sobriety, somebody close to me in my life, you know, and I was able to walk through it. A couple of years later, my 3rd child, my son, he gets killed. He was 20 years old. I was about 7 years sober. And it was the hardest thing that a person can walk through, to lose a child. But the thing was, is that taking a drink would not solve the problem. It would not take away what has happened, and it would not do anything for that pain that I was experiencing. I had a lot of conversations with God in my backyard. Then it was like, well, things happen for a reason. There are a lot of people who go through death. 2 years before that, I was in a meeting at St. John's Church downtown. It was a noon meeting. And there was a lady in that meeting who had just lost her 10-year-old son. I hadn't lost my child yet. And he had a freak accident where a ball hit his chest. I don't know if it was a soccer or a baseball. I can't remember. But it stopped his heart, and he just dropped and died. And she was in a meeting. And I just looked at her, and people were like, yeah, she just lost her son. And I'm like, when I lost my son, I went back to that lady. If she can walk through this, and she's still sober today, we do talk, you know, I approached her and told her how she helped me. So it helped me to walk through what I was going through in my life, you know. And so I know for a fact that God has a plan for each one of us. God has chosen me to get sober, to be in recovery, to continue to be out there. I am sponsoring this sponsee right now. Her story is my story. She chose me because of my loss. She lost her son. And she just basically, she identified with that, and she needed that support. And she reached out to me. And I'll always be there. And I will not shy off and talking about what happened to me in my life, because the reality is there might be somebody out here that has that same problem, and that might need that help. And so if I can help, I will help. If I can offer my words or my history, I'll do that. You know, I'm not going to shy away from it, you know. And so today she's doing well. She's got a couple of years. She's going to the same meetings that I go to. You know, we see each other all the time. That's so important. You're good. You get a sponsor. At least have one meeting a week that you see your sponsor and you're talking to them, you know, and meet with them, you know. But it's your, for me, it's my responsibility to make that phone call and to call, you know. And that phone could be 1,000 pounds when you don't want to call, because then you have to be vulnerable and you got to talk about what's really going on in your life. You know, and for me, I'm like, I want help. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. That's the way I see it. I have a granddaughter right now, and we're helping our daughter to raise her, you know. And she just did her first communion in church on Saturday, you know. And my husband and I were there for her. To, you know, she would come to our house after school, and my husband will be there. He's retired a couple of months ago, and he basically would be there, and then I would drop her off Tuesday to the church. She'd go to her class, and then I would go to my meeting. And then if she needed to be picked up, he would pick her up. So it takes a village to raise me, and to me, it's an honor. It's an honor to be part of her life, and it's an honor to be part of Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I didn't have my recovery today, I wouldn't have a life. I owe everything to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, if you guys just allow it to happen in your lives, you would not. So many gifts will happen. You know, the beginning of, you know, last year, the end of last year, my son was going through some difficult times in his life. And when your kids go through difficult times, they may be adults, but they affect you. It affected me. And I was like talking in meetings and crying in meetings. And I'm like, I need your guys' support. I need your prayers. Let's pray for him. Please, you know, he needs that help, you know. And my friends, my spiritual friends that I have, because this is a spiritual program, you guys. If you need an uplift, it doesn't matter who your God is, as long as you're not God. And I know I'm not God. I don't have the answers. And so I relied on my family within my church, my family within AA, you know, and they helped me through it. And today he's with me. You know, he's got 73 days sobriety. I thought I was going to lose him. And I don't know, I just pray for God to restore his sanity, to bring him, you know, to remove the obsession from his mind. And that's what I prayed for when I was in the beginning of my sobriety. Please, God, remove this obsession from my mind. The big book talks about it. To get this obsession to want to drink or use or do anything away from my mind. Because the reality is I can't do it by myself. I just cannot. Because if I do it, then I'm being self-centered, selfish. It's all about me. And I'm not giving the credit or asking for the help from other people or from my higher power. You know, I go to a Tuesday night meeting. I've been doing this meeting for 23 years. 23 years. I've been going to the Tuesday night meeting and my Thursday night meeting. And those are called commitment meetings. You go to the same place on a regular basis every week. And the reason why we do that is for I can get to know you and you can get to know me. And so when I know that I'm going through problems, my covers can be pulled. So then that way I don't get all into myself and start isolating what I used to do in the past, and then I run into trouble. For me, it's worked. I haven't relapsed. I'm grateful to God that I haven't relapsed. But I keep doing what people suggest to me within the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I keep coming back. I keep doing the meetings. I keep being part of. And when I was 15 years sober, I just felt something's wrong. I didn't know what it was, and I had to change sponsors. And now my second sponsor, I'm still with her today. And we are in a meeting every Thursday night together. But when I went to a workshop called Emotional Sobriety up in Grass Valley, and I got to hear a speaker, his name was Wayne B. Oh, my God, that was a game changer for me. I started to really work on my innermost self, you know, and to really take inventory on my part. And he put me right back more into the big book in the 12 and 12. And the reality was is that I have to really look at my character defects. I have a lot of character defects. I don't know about you guys, but I have a lot. And I still, and when you're, where it's the worst is when I walk into that my house. I have a husband. We've been married 23 years. We got married in sobriety. We got back together, my fourth child's father. And we winded up having an AA marriage, a wedding, because half the party was AA and half the party were friends and work friends and family. And the reality was is that it took a lot to go through that. And I am so happy. My youngest daughter, she was 4 years old when I got sober. She's 32 today. I raised her in Alcoholics Anonymous, in sobriety. She does not cuss. She does not yell. She, to me at least, she's a very calm person. She lives in LA with her boyfriend, and they're making it work. She's been there like several years now. I wasn't doing that. I was messed up, you know, and she's functioning a well-grounded young lady. I'm so proud of her. We all have our trials and tribulations, and we all keep moving forward. You know, I don't know what your journey is, but the reality is if you want to have a better outcome, stick around. This is where it's going to happen. I guarantee you. You don't have to do it alone. One thing that I really learned from AA, this is a we program. It's not I. We do it together. And that's what I learned, because let me tell you, when I did I, it dug a deeper hole for me, and I did not want that. So I'm glad that you asked me to share and be here, and I hope that I said something to help you guys to keep coming back, because that's what it's all about. Keep coming back, because this program does work. Thank you.